Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. And question number one, it was on this very day back in which year that Paul McCartney recorded the song Yesterday? Was that A, 1960, B, 1965, C, 1970, or D, 1975? So, which year was Yesterday? And question number two, it was on this day back in which year that John Lennon made his very last TV appearance to sing his song, Imagine. Was that A, 1960, B, 1965, C, 1970, or D, 1975? Lennon's song, Imagine. Which year was that? The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 12th. Well, it was on this day back in 1935 at age 17 that Ella Fitzgerald recorded her first songs. The two songs were Love and Kisses and I'll Chase the Blues Away, 1935 today. And it was 26 years ago today, 1994, that Cab Calloway suffered a stroke from which he never truly recovered. He died November 18, 1994, at the age of 86. Cab Calloway. Katy Prewitt's Out of the Blue introduces our country music news. It's an article written by Joseph Kudak, published in Rolling Stone, May 2020 issue. A country folk songwriter full of hard-won southern optimism. For Katy Prewitt, getting a Catholic education in her conservative Johns Creek, Georgia hometown wasn't a ton of fun. The schools were strict. If she didn't tuck in the shirt of her uniform, she'd be forced to eat alone, handwriting prayers during a quote-unquote silent lunch. Being closeted didn't make things easier. There were maybe two out of people in my school, one gay guy, one gay girl, and the gay girl got bullied, Prewitt says. She drew on experiences like these for her debut album, Expectations, a majestic LP that blends country and folk with indie rock. Prewitt, 26, writes piercing first-person lyrics about topics ranging from her sexuality and mental health to family and faith. Some memories made it directly onto her songs. Seven Hail Marys, if I copped an attitude, she sings on Normal. Prewitt came out at 20, but feared telling her parents. When she finally did, it created a rift. She addresses the conflict in the staggering Georgia. My father would scream. He'd scream out in rage, she sings. He did not want a daughter whose soul wasn't saved. But since then, she and her folks worked to find common ground. They have made strides and overcome their fear and discomfort with it, Prewitt says, which I'm incredibly proud of them for. It taught me to have some patience. Pruitt already had discipline. As a kid, she taught herself to play guitar by locking herself away in her room and studying John Mayer and Dave Matthews. Her nimble playing is essential to her sound, but it's her voice you notice first, at times soft and soulful. It builds to a cathartic wail in songs like Expectation and Loving Her. I wanted to intentional about my moments and not just be big the whole time, she says, but I love belting out. Pruitt has earned rave reviews for Expectations, and she shared a stage in March with Bob Weir for Ramble on Rose as the Rhythm Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. After a tornado ripped through the city that same month, she helped soothe a shell-shocked crowd at a benefit show. There is reverence when you are connecting with an audience in a silent room, Pruitt says, echoes of her Catholic upbringing coming into focus. I love the concept that there is some force, but I never quite thought it was a man floating in the sky guarding a gate. I think God is anything good.
Life goes on,
full of surprises.
You'll be faced with problems of all shapes and sizes.
You're going to have to make a few compromises for now.
For now.
But only for now.
For now.
Only for
The cast of Avenue Q singing For Now introduces our Broadway music news. It's an article entitled How One Song from Avenue Q Kind of Explains the Tumult of the 21st Century. This is written by Emily van der Werf on June the 6th, 2020 in Vox, V-O-X. One of my favorite show tunes is For Now, the concluding number of the terrifically entertaining Tony-winning musical Avenue Q, which ran on and off Broadway from 2003 to 2019. The show posits a sort of Sesame Street for 20-something set in a neighborhood populated with both puppets and humans who learn important lessons about entering adulthood. For Now sums up the musical's ultimately sunny message: nothing in life will last forever. You're going to be fine, no matter how terrible your current circumstances seem, and no matter how much you might long to go back to college. How could you possibly not be fine? You're young, and if you're at a theater, presumably financially stable, things are great. For now, we're healthy. For now, we're employed. For now, we're happy, if not overjoyed, goes one lyric.
Only for now.
Each time you smile.
For Now works so well as a closer to Avenue Q because it's a reminder that, as nearly the last lyric in the whole musical go, life may be scary, but it's only temporary. When you're in your 20s right after college, it's easy to dwell on things that feel like they might last forever, but none of them will. You'll figure it out. You'll have new problems, but those will only be for now as well. You're going to keep going up and up and up. I still love this song as much as I did when I first heard it in 2007, but it's also a lie. My point is that a lyric like George Bush is only for now. A lyric in a song that taught me a lot about getting through rough patches can only be swapped out for a lyric like Donald Trump is only for now. If you are relatively sure that once either man leaves office, you will be fundamentally okay. Equating a president you don't like with bad hair is a position of extreme privilege. So is the idea that everything in life is only for now. It's only for now if you have the expectation that America is a ladder that keeps going up and up and up. That's true for me, but I'm white and I have enough money. I have the luxury of believing my setbacks are only temporary. It is so easy to believe that everybody's problems are like your own when you don't face any real problems. It's so easy to numb yourself to the horrors of the world because confronting them might require examining your own culpability. I love For Now so much, and it's a song that found me when I needed it most, but it's a song designed to placate people like me, to turn a haircut or a president or systemic racism into a boss in a video game. It is a failure of imagination to think that all problems are merely inconveniences. It is a failure of empathy to believe that all other people experience life like I do, as a series of steps and events carrying me towards some uncertain but hopeful future. It is a failure of understanding to assume that optimism is the natural offshoot of being an American, because the country has so many social issues and injustices with deep roots that will not be so easily torn out of the ground to build something better. But it's worth trying to build that something all the same, and that will require some degree of getting really, truly invested in something bigger than yourself. By the way, this Tony-winning musical, Avenue Q, celebrates its 17th birthday next month. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Summer's Very Best Drive-In Events, Concerts, Movies, Comedy, and So Much More. This is written by Suzanne Rowan Kelleher in Forbes.com on the 23rd of May, 2020. Bummed that so many summer concerts, festivals, and sporting events have been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic? A throwback to the 1950s is turning out to be the season's entertainment salvation. As we enter our summer of social distancing, drive-in theaters are experiencing a veritable revival thanks to the winning combination of fresh air surroundings and stay-in-your-car seating. With indoor cinemas still closed in most states, film lovers are flocking to drive-ins to see the latest movies. And when there isn't a drive-in available, communities are creating them. Along with the 300-odd classic drive-in theaters scattered around the country, pop-up drive-ins are appearing, well, everywhere. In the parking lots of malls, disused concert venues, and sports stadiums, as well as at public docks and in open fields. The phenomena is happening in big cities like Omaha, Nebraska, and small towns like Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, from Shoreline, Washington, to Brevard, North Carolina, and from Chicago, Illinois, to Charleston, West Virginia. Drive-ins are popping up like daisies. Across the country, we see gigantic indoor movie cineplexes, such as the Marcus Majestic Cinema in Waukesha, Wisconsin, and Twin Creek Cinema in Bellevue, Nebraska, converting their enormous parking lots to drive-in theaters and showing outward and outdoor double features all summer long. But drive-ins are not just for movies these days. Earlier this month, Keith Urban became the first major artist to do a drive-in concert when he performed for a few hundred medical personnel sheltering in cars and trucks at the Stardust Drive-In Theater in Watertown, Tennessee. Around the country, drive-in venues are hosting movie screenings, concerts, comedy nights, stunt shows, family matinees, and much, much more. Caribou's You and I introduces our rock and pop music news. It's a review published in The Week magazine on March the 13th, 2020, of Caribou's new album, Suddenly, which is given 4 out of a possible 4 stars. Dan Snaith, the Canadian-born, London-based dance music guru who records as Caribou, has spent 20 years now mixing festival tent ecstasy and heartfelt interiority, says Rob Harvilla in TheRinger.com. Still, his first Caribou album in 5 years feels like his most personal yet. It's also extravagantly rewarding, whether you think about it way too hard or hardly think about it at all. It provides close listeners with magician-like cuts between piano arpeggios and thundering EDM. Yet it's also loaded with pop earworms. The album's signature move is a sudden warping of the music, said Alexis Pedridis in TheGuardian.com. But Snaith has also pushed his fragile, unshowy vocals to the forefront, and doing so turns out remarkably impactful. His unpredictable career has ended up in an exciting niche, a place where electronic auteur meets singer-songwriter, where an innate feel of for pop music and the dance floor coexists with experimentation. The song, You and I, playing in the background now, was one of the first tracks on the album that I started and one of the last tracks I finished, Snaith said in a recent statement. It existed in some form or other throughout the whole arc of making the record. It also captures a lot of what the record and the title of the album are about. The track changes suddenly and unpredictably, and it is about a change in my life that happened out of the blue. Sounds a bit like Daft Punk. Get lucky.
Have a little song, won't take long. Sing it right once or twice. Oh, Lord, and me, didn't I shake sugary? Everything I got is done and gone.
Rihanna Giddens of the Carolina Chocolate Drops singing Shake Sugary introduces our local music news. It's an article entitled Homemade Jams, written by Mark Kemp, Our State magazine, April 2020 issue. Across North Carolina, folks are opening their living rooms and yards to friends and neighbors for house concerts that bring communities together through the intimacy and fellowship of song. Sam and Emily Hawes of Boone, for example, host occasional shows in their front yard under the name Old Keller Farm Outdoor Concerts. Others include the Piano Salon in Chapel Hill, 40 Acres in the Triangle, Key City Sessions in North Wilkesboro, and the Big Purple in Greensboro. The sweet hum of an acoustic guitar, a feathery soprano voice, and a chorus of buzzing cicadas trickle out from behind the eggplant Purple Craftsman-style home in Greensboro Fisher Park. Around dusk on Olive Street, people toting potluck dishes and bottles of wine follow the seductive sounds to a narrow asphalt driveway leading to a fenced-in backyard. There, under a canopy of oaks, magnolias, and crepe myrtles, about 100 people sit in rows of chairs facing a wooden pergola lined with tiny lights. The acoustic guitar and voice belong to Laura Lynn Dossett, a North Carolina singer who's written songs for groups like the Carolina Chocolate Drops and lent her writing and performing talents to numerous plays and radio shows, including NPR's A Prairie Home Companion. Wearing a black dress and brown wedge sandals, she's performing a concert behind the home of her friends Sue Hunt and Jim Halsh. The couple has been staging intimate house concerts in their living room or backyard for the past 7 years. They call their series Music at the Big Purple.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
So, how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that Paul McCartney recorded the song Yesterday, which is playing in the background now. Was that A, 1960, B, 65, C, 70, or D, 75? Correct answer. Answer B, 1965. As noted by Paul McGinnis on 9/12/19 and YouDiscoverMusic.com, even by the Beatles' exceptional standards, Monday, 14 June 1965, was something of a masterclass of productivity. Just a couple of days after the announcement that they were to be awarded the MBE by the Queen, the group were back at EMI's studio on Abbey Road. The afternoon saw them record two songs, but it was the evening session that reaped the greatest rewards. Between 7 p.m. and 10 p.m., they recorded the Paul McCartney penned Yesterday, or more accurately, Paul recorded it on his own, alone with his acoustic guitar.
Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
I brought the song into the studio for the first time and played it on the guitar, Paul would recall. But soon Ringo said, I can't really put any drums on. It wouldn't make sense. And John and George said, there's no point in having another guitar. So George Martin suggested, why don't you just try it by yourself and see how it works? As the most covered song in the Beatles catalog, Yesterday's origins have been pored over many times. As Paul has testified, he wrote it in his sleep. I woke up with a lovely tune in my head. I thought, that's great. I wonder what it is. I got out of bed and sat at the piano. Once the song was taped that Monday in June 1965, the Beatles and their producer, George Martin, began to wonder what to do with it. Martin remembers saying to Paul, the only thing I can think of is adding strings, but I know what you think about that. And Paul said, I don't want Mantovani. I said, what about a very small number of string players, a quartet? He thought that was interesting. This was the first time that a Beatles song had been augmented by such an ensemble, but it wouldn't be the last. Yesterday was included on the Help album in the UK, though it didn't feature in the film. In summer 1965, and given a U.S. single release on 13 September that year, spending 4 weeks at number one, it would go on to be arguably the Beatles' most famous song. And the answer to our second question? It was on this day back in which year that John Lennon made his very last TV appearance to sing his song, Imagine. Correct answer? Answer D, 1975. Imagine, exactly 10 years after Yesterday. And as noted by Lori Ulster on June 21, 2019 in Biography.com, now I understand what you have to do. Put your political message across with a little honey. So said John Lennon about Imagine, the most successful single of his solo career. The song has been covered by artists in every genre, from Liza Minnelli and Stevie Wonder to Neil Young and Lady Gaga, and performed at some of the biggest events across the globe, the Olympics, New Year's Eve, Concerts for Peace, Concerts for Hunger. The impact of the song is unquestionable, but disguised within its message of peace and love and its flowing piano melody is a collection of edgy, dangerous ideas that challenge society as we know it. The song that has become an anthem all over the world is actually full of controversial lyrics and radical ideas. Lennon composed the song in one session, sitting at his white grand piano in May 1971. His wife, Yoko Ono, watched him as he played the melody and wrote most of the lyrics. He recorded it in his home studio with help from several musicians and producer Phil Spector, who uncharacteristically kept the track fairly simple. Strings were added by members of the New York Philharmonic. Everyone knew the song was special at the time, but couldn't have had any idea of the impact it would have on the world, both musically and politically. Paul McCartney admitted he knew it was a killer the first time he heard it. Bono said it was the reason for his career. George Martin, famous for producing the Beatles' records and helping steer them to musical superstardom, says the album it's on, Imagine, is the one he most wishes he'd produced. And Jimmy Carter said, in many countries around the world, my wife and I have visited about 125 countries, you hear John Lennon's song Imagine used almost equally with national anthems. The song has been accepted all over the world as a song of peace and unity. It sounds about as anti-establishment as a song can be, and yet it is a song of positivity and hope about the possibilities of a better human existence. His lyrical influence was a Christian prayer book given to him by comedian activist Dick Gregory, which touted the concept of positive prayer. The imagination, Lennon was telling us, is the most powerful tool we have. It's a call for us to imagine something that seems unimaginable in the world we live in. It's revolutionary without calling for literal revolution, and has no less relevance in the uncertain world of today than it did in 1971 when it was written. In a world of unending conflict over exactly the things he mentions in the song, we want to imagine it too. So let's close out today's program with this song of needed unity. John Lennon, Imagine.
Imagine all the people living for today.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. We're here at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.
I hope someday you'll join us.